Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Remember, we're also live on Facebook. And in case you'd like to comment on the stories we're covering, just go on our page, DW Africa, and leave your comments.
Coming up, Cameroonians are preparing to go to the polls this year and many are still divided on another Paul Biya presidency. Biya has been at the helm since 1982.
I think that it's time for him to leave the seat for a younger person.
The engagement we have taken at the level of our party is to mobilize our supporters to register massively so that we can thank our national president by giving him our votes.
The United Nations warns South Sudan is close to famine once again following years of civil war and economic collapse.
And we will carry those 1 million people in front of us up to next harvest. It means we need more humanitarian support to address these new needs.
These are some of the stories that we have lined up for you, but first is a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. South Sudan is close to another famine, the United Nations warned today. Almost two-thirds of the population will need food aid this year to stave off starvation and malnutrition. Over 5 million people, representing 48% of the population, are directly threatened by hunger. But UN Humanitarian Coordinator Alain Oudéhou said more than aid was needed.
At the same time, the fighting ongoing in the country and the insecurity need to be stopped to reduce vulnerability so people can go back to their home and go back to the land and they can start to plow the field.
South Sudan won independence from Sudan in 2011 but descended into civil war about 2 years later. The Nigerian government today acknowledged the disappearance of 110 girls almost a week after the Islamic terrorist group Boko Haram attacked a town in the federal state of Yobe. Eyewitnesses said militants asked specifically where the girls' school in Dapchi was located before abducting the young women at gunpoint. The population had been mounting protests angered by conflicting information on the number of girls taken and their whereabouts. At least two people died in the Democratic Republic of Congo during anti-government protests, according to the United Nations. Church activists said three people died and almost 50 were injured when police forcefully disbanded protest marches. More than 100 demonstrators were arrested. The mobile internet was shut down. The peaceful protests to ask President Joseph Kabila to step down had been called by the opposition close to the Catholic Church. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A court in Tanzania sentenced two opposition leaders to 5 months in prison for insulting President John Magufuli. The decision is likely to fuel criticism that authorities are undermining democracy and free speech. Joseph Mbilinyi, a lawmaker from the main opposition Chadema Party, and local party leader Emmanuel Masonga were condemned for using abusive language against the president at a public rally. United Nations Secretary General António Guterres on Monday demanded the immediate implementation of a 30-day ceasefire in Syria and the cessation of Damascus regime continued bombardment of the rebel-held eastern Ghouta,
particularly to ensure the immediate, safe, unimpeded and sustained delivery of humanitarian aid and services, the evacuation of the critically sick and the wounded, and the alleviation of the suffering of the Syrian people.
On weekend, the Security Council adopted a resolution for a ceasefire after 5 days of diplomatic wrangling. Russia's President Putin, an ally of the Damascus regime, today ordered a daily five-hour truce in eastern Ghouta starting on Tuesday to allow for humanitarian aid to be delivered. Germany is a step closer to a new government after election results in September forced Chancellor Angela Merkel to a month of complicated coalition negotiations. On Monday, her party, the centre-right Christian Democratic Union, overwhelmingly approved the deal for a coalition with the Social Democrats of the SPD. But the agreement still requires approval by the SPD membership. Results from a postal ballot will be announced on March 4th. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
Welcome back from the news. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. We start off in Cameroon. Cameroon is gearing up for the general election in October amidst the ongoing unrest due to the crisis that has rocked the English-speaking regions of the country. The contest for the top post is expected to be tough, with 85-year-old Paul Biya, who has ruled the country for over 35 years, expected to vie once again, since his party, the Cameroon's People Democratic Movement, CPDM, regards him as a natural candidate.
The main opposition has selected Deputy Leader Joshua Ossi as its presidential candidate to challenge the long-ruling Biya. But many Cameroonians are calling for a change of leadership and believe he should now pass on the mantle. From Yaoundé, Moki Kinseka filed this report.
The battle for the presidency appears to be heating up, with the newly named opposition party candidate leader, Joshua Ossi, set to challenge the long-ruling Paul Biya. But many Cameroonians along the streets of Bamenda and capital Yaoundé say Biya's time is up.
I think that it's time for him to leave the seat for a younger person so that the nation can take up another trend, because with the developing world now, you see that the young people are more vibrant, so that the nation can change.
He has brought peace and development in Cameroon. He has done a lot for Cameroon. There are things that he should go. Jesus did all he could do and left at the age of 33.
Some, like Martin Engolo, who is 36, say they have not known any other president, and Biya should emulate the opposition's chairman, John Frunti, who said he would not be running for the presidency again.
He's supposed to have left because he has been in power for long. And many people around him do just anything for their interest, because they know that when Biya is there, they will be free from all punishment. He's supposed to have peacefully given his position to another person. He has been here for a long time, and I think that all state servants should at one moment retire. He's supposed to take his retirement normally, under normal circumstances, to avoid noise and conflicts.
But this song is being re-echoed by Biya's supporters every day. Ruling party CPDM and Biya's close ally, Armand Yeje, say they want him to vie again and remain their life president due to his strong development track record.
The engagement we have taken at the level of our party is to mobilize our supporters to register massively so that we can thank our national president by giving him our votes during presidential, senatorial and local council elections he has announced for this year.
Moki Kinseza reporting from Yaoundé.
And of course, Eddie, people are talking about it on the social media, on our Facebook page live now. There's someone with the name Valerie Momo who says, Cameroon, if you do not leave power, power will leave you. And there's someone by the name Popola Fatima who says, if there is a disappointment, then he should step down.
Interesting comments coming through, of course. Now, Michael Chi Sawaya says, very strong comment there. Nobody with normal sense wants Biya to run for elections. Only those who profit from the hyper-centralized system that are supporting Biya's candidacy. But for the Anglophones, we are not concerned with elections, but independence of Southern Cameroonians.
Yeah, so Ambazonia, of course, there's someone saying Ambazonia should be free. And, of course, we keep on getting many comments from Ambazonia and Cameroon and the part of Biafra. And what we should like, what we'd like to say is that we keep all news updated. And when we get news from these areas, we'll also keep you updated.
As always. Now, moving on to other news. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered a daily five-hour truce and the creation of a humanitarian corridor to allow civilians to leave the rebel-held Syrian enclave of Eastern Ghouta. Now, this comes after the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres demanded the immediate implementation of a 30-day ceasefire in Syria as the Damascus regime continued its deadly bombardment a day after the UN Security Council approved a ceasefire. And the Kremlin, however, denied any involvement in the fresh attacks.
The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, SOHR, has reported over 40 civilians killed in airstrikes over the weekend. The dead include 8 children, as Russian-backed Syrian government warplanes continue to bomb eastern Ghouta a day after the UN ceasefire vote. UN Chief Antonio Guterres has reiterated the need for the ceasefire deal to be respected and to allow humanitarian operations to proceed.
Security Council resolutions are only meaningful if they are effectively implemented. And that is why I expect the resolution to be immediately implemented and sustained, particularly to ensure the immediate, safe, unimpeded and sustained delivery of humanitarian aid and services, the evacuation of the critically sick and the wounded, and the alleviation of the suffering of the Syrian people.
The ceasefire resolution, however, does not apply to military operations against the so-called Islamic State, Al-Qaeda and groups associated with them, or other groups designated as terrorist organizations by the Security Council. Russia's President Vladimir Putin has ordered a humanitarian pause starting Tuesday.
DW's Crispin Wakideo with that report.
And now we head to South Sudan. It's now 1 year since they declared a famine, a declaration which was later lifted in June. But according to a new report by the United Nations, the country is close to another famine after more than 4 years of civil war and failed ceasefires. At the moment, at least 6 million people continue to face hunger. That's an increase of 40% since last year. Ina Kemules has more.
According to the UN report, over 150,000 people in the states of Jonglei, Upper Nile, Unity and Western Bahr el-Ghazal could be hit by famine within 5 months. The UN says projections are clear that almost two-thirds of the population will need food aid this year to cope with starvation. Serge Tizor is the representative of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization in South Sudan.
We have started the year 2018 with more than 1 million people on the top of the figure of last year regarding severity, food and security. And we will carry those 1 million people in front of us up to next harvest. It means we need more humanitarian support to address these new needs.
5 years of fighting has further complicated the situation and prevented farmers from raising crops. Aid workers are now warning that if the situation persists, even with food aid, more than 30 countries in South Sudan could face severe hunger by May, requiring large-scale assistance. Isaiah Chol Aruhai, the chairperson for the South Sudan National Bureau of Statistics, says they are preparing for the coming months.
The National Bureau of Statistics, the government host institution, acknowledges with concern the seriousness of the 2 IPC projection period for 2018 with the likely and early start of the peak of the lean season and urges all actors to scale up their efforts in the coming months in order to prevent further deterioration of food insecurity and malnutrition in the country.
South Sudan has been torn apart by an ethnically charged civil war since late 2013, when troops loyal to President Salva Kiir and then Vice President Riek Machar clashed, forcing more than 4 million people to flee.
Ina Kemules with that report.
Now, Zippy, regarding the comments on Syria, a lot have actually come through. Because of time, we'll just read one or two. Tarish Khan says, may Allah protect the people of Syria from these terrorists. Their lives don't matter to the world because they are not European or Americans. Very strong comment there, but you can understand a bit the angle that it's coming from. But due to time, we'll be reading out the other comments right after this break.
So there's a lot happening in Syria, in South Sudan, famine. So keep those comments coming and we will keep reading them right here on DW Africa.
Welcome back once again to the program. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. We are also live on Facebook. Thank you to all those who have been contributing and dropping the comments. You can see them here. Eric Asewe is writing to us and is talking about the story of Cameroon, which we had on our top story. But of course, we have a lot coming up in the next 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that is Rwanda criticized on ineffective malnutrition projects, as reports indicate that 38% of children face malnutrition.
We need to focus on policies that reduce poverty, because if 38% of Rwandans are still living below the poverty line, that makes it around 4 million people. You wonder if those people have enough food, or do they even have food? That is an issue that needs to be prioritized.
We'll be coming up with more on that story, but first to Ghana. Corruption is a major problem for many governments, especially in Africa. The country is trying to combat the issue as perceptions about corruption among public officials continue to soar. The Ghanaian president has just sworn in a special prosecutor solely for the fight against corruption, and that person starts work today. Isaac Kaleji has more on this anti-corruption crusade.
Ghana was ranked 81 out of 180 countries in the 2018 Corruption Perception Index. That is a drop of 11 places from the 2016 ranking, a signal that many Ghanaians still believe there is so much corruption in the public sector. The promise to fight corruption significantly contributed to the electoral victory of the current president Nana Akufo-Addo in 2016, and he has now set the tone to win the fight by setting up a special prosecutor just for corruption cases.
I, Martin Alamisi Benz Kaiser Amidu,
do in the name of the Almighty God swear.
Do in the name of the Almighty God swear.
Thus, the president's appointee for the office of the special prosecutor, Martin Amidu, taking his oath of office to begin work from this week. Amidu is a former Attorney General of Ghana and is widely celebrated for his anti-corruption activism and is well-respected across the political divide. Ghana's president, Nana Akufo-Addo, has, however, cautioned the special prosecutor against witch-hunting and wrongful targeting.
The Ghanaian people expect the office of the special prosecutor to fight relentlessly and help eliminate corruption in our public life.
Amidu, in his message to Ghanaians, promised to discharge his duties with integrity and the greatest honesty.
I wish to assure you that the propaganda about witch hunting will not daunt me from prosecuting all corruption crimes without reference to political considerations. Once a suspected offender is established by investigation to have committed offenses prosecutable in the national interest, I will treat crime as crime and nothing else.
For many Ghanaians, the new special prosecutor office is highly commendable and will play a critical role in the country's fight against corruption. Two Ghanaian lawmakers who have spoken publicly against corruption, Dr. Dominic Ayeni and Joseph Osei Wusu, respectively expressed confidence in the president's nominee and have high expectation of him as he begins work.
He's a very tenacious and principled person, and I believe that he will do justice to all manner of persons.
My assessment is that he's a very versatile man. He's very sharp in the mind, and he appears to be very committed.
Even before the special prosecutor begins work, two former public officials have been jailed just last week by the courts for defrauding the state under the previous government. That should set the tone for his work to expose others who may have done similar corrupt deals and stop others from doing same.
Isaac Kaleji with that report.
And of course, Eddie, as you know, on our Facebook page, the 77 debate is about who is to blame for human trafficking. Is it the failure of African governments to provide job opportunities for youngsters, family pressures, or false image of Europe passed on by fellow Africans?
Definitely. And it's had some interesting comments coming through. I'm sure you and I could have even answered. We could have had a long debate on that. But, well, the Harris Bull says, we blame our leaders for being tribalist and money greedy. They never see tomorrow. And that's an interesting comment, saying that leaders don't have that foresight and vision. They only look at immediate financial benefits and don't think ahead. That's a big challenge.
Yeah, that's the problem. Now let's hear from Jay King in Cameroon, who sent us a voice note.
African youths are not too interested in politics. We don't like politics. We don't want to be ministers. We don't want to be presidents. We don't want to be directors. All we want is just a job that can permit us to live and be a little family. May you have your car, have your, be able to drink, be able to take care of your wife, send your kid to school. But that's not the case. That's why most of us are forced to migrate out of the country to go into Europe and other part of the world in search of green pastures.
That was Jay King, who sent his opinion all the way from Cameroon. And of course, people, there are many more who are talking about it.
Many more comments, but it's a very interesting clip from Jay King, Cameroon. And the migration dilemma obviously continues. Ernesto Atem says, the gross dishonesty of the so-called European powers who meddle in leadership of African countries, meddle in natural resources to set the purchase and sales price and conditions. They create imperialistic wars. Okay, so clearly you can tell this is a disgruntled comment.
Yeah, thank you very much. So continue sending us your comments and we will read them whenever we can.
Health check.
Now, Eddie, we'll talk about health matters. As you know, Rwanda's health sector has over the years been praised for its sustainable growth in several areas, including providing health insurance to most of its poor, fighting HIV/AIDS, and reducing the number of mothers who die while giving birth. However, the issue of malnutrition continues to be a challenge, with the number of children who continue to face malnutrition and its effect standing at 38%. The health ministry has been criticized for launching many programs and not implementing them. Nasra Bishumba has more from Rwanda.
Rwanda is one of the few countries offering subsidized health cover for its citizens, a move which has been hailed for improving the livelihoods of many. However, a health survey commissioned by the Ministry of Health in 2015 indicates that the number of malnourished children is still high, and at least 9% of those below 5 years are underweight. The country's Senate is now pushing the government to prioritize its fight against malnutrition. Senator Gallican Nyongana says the tactics by various ministries to fight malnutrition are not working.
A ministry within its mandate of duties thinks of a program to do with fighting malnutrition and it promptly begins implementation. Another one also thinks of another program and does the same. While all of them may be aimed at rooting out the malnutrition issue, what one cannot help but wonder is the sustainability of all these programs.
Many, like Senator Jean Damascene Ahukuriryayo, say the focus should be first to fight poverty, to eradicate hunger among children.
We need to focus on policies that reduce poverty, because if 38% of Rwandans are still living below the poverty line, that makes it around 4 million people. You wonder if those people have enough food? Or do they even have food? That is an issue that needs to be prioritized, but it should be directly linked to sensitizing the people about the value of family planning.
On his part, the Prime Minister, Edouard Ngirente, says that they are working on changing perceptions by teaching the younger generation about good nutrition.
The fact that there was no coordination is why we decided to put one institution that was central to all activities that concerned the livelihood and growth of a child from the conception stage. For change to happen, we must change mindsets by putting these programs in schools, by teaching children from a young age about living quality lives, good feeding, and proper hygiene.
As part of its efforts to fight malnutrition, the government is also encouraging mothers to focus on the first 1,000 days of the child's life, especially prioritizing exclusive breastfeeding. Only 17% of mothers in Rwanda breastfeed exclusively for just 6 months.
Nasra Bishumba reporting from Kigali.
Now, Zipporah, let's move away from health to sports. You're a sports fan? You love sports?
Of course. I'm looking forward to hear.
Okay, then let's see what we have. Now, moving on, the Pyeongchang 2018 Winter Olympic Games has ended, but with everlasting memories for sure. Also, Ghana's senior women's national team, the Black Queens, have been crowned champions of the WAFU Zumbi Women's Tournament. DW Sports correspondent Samson O'Malley joins us from Abuja with more.
The Pyeongchang 2018 Winter Olympic Games has ended, but the Games will be remembered for Nigeria's Winter Olympics adventure, driven by an all-female bobsled team who became the first ever Africans to participate in bobsled at the Winter Olympics. Seun Adigun, one of the athletes, said, though they finished in 20th place out of 20, they all have reasons to celebrate and be excited.
What we've done has set the groundwork for how people will now get into the sport, and it has started a wave, literally, since before we even got to this point, the inquiries that were coming in, the interest of people from not only homegrown within Nigeria, but within the diaspora that are now encouraged to do something all over the world.
Away from the snow and now to the field, Ghana's Black Queens have been crowned the champions of the maiden edition of WAFU Zumbi Women's Tournament after beating host Cote d'Ivoire 1-0 in the final game on Saturday. A second-minute strike from Janet Aguirre was all it took the 2015 All-African Games champions to deny the Ivorians a host and a win dream. Nigeria's Super Falcons earlier claimed third place with a 2-1 win over Mali. Newly appointed Bayana coach Desiree Ellis aims to start her new job on a high by leaving a lasting impression on the Cyprus Women's Cup. South Africa are aiming for their first ever finish at the annual event. This will be the sixth time Bayana will be taking part in the tournament against a highly ranked opposition.
Going to any tournament, going to any game, you want to win it, and we are no different. So we'll take it game by game, but the idea is to go out and win the games and then play off for the best position that we can, but you have to win all your games.
Kenya's Dixon Chumba cruised to victory in the 2018 Tokyo Marathon, cutting the tape in a time of 2 hours, 5 minutes, 30 seconds to win the men's race in the Japanese capital. It was his second win in the marathon after his exploits in 2014 after finishing third in the last three editions. The Super Eagles of Nigeria coach Garrett Raw says he will not bring in new players but will keep the core of the current World Cup-bound team for the Summer 2018 World Cup in Russia. The Super Eagles of Nigeria have been hit by a goalkeeping crisis after first-choice Carl Ikeme was diagnosed with leukemia. Both Daniel Akpeyi and his replacement, Ikechukwu Ezenwa, have failed to impress, while Francis Uzoho is inexperienced.
I have already a lot of good players who brought us to the World Cup. So if somebody wants to come in, he must be much better than these players who brought us to the World Cup.
CAF Champions League holders Wydad Casablanca won the African Super Cup title after beating DR Congo giants TP Mazembe 1-0 with a late strike at the start Mohamed V on Saturday. It is the first African Super Cup title in the history of Wydad Casablanca, who beat Al Ahly in the Champions League final last year to win their maiden Champions League crown.
That was Samson O'Malley with a sports roundup.
And of course, on our Facebook page, many of our listeners are very active at the moment. We have some new listeners, of course, from Ghana. Erica Sawe, they're talking about the story of Ghana fighting corruption with a new prosecutor. And of course, Erica Sawe says corruption can only be fought if there is will from the people and the leaders elected. It is a vice that is killing dreams of many young people. Another one also from Ghana, Daniel Adusei, says, our country, Ghana, is working again under Nana Addo. The battle is still the Lord's.
Well, yeah, we're quite religious people, so the battle definitely we would give it to the Lord's. But anyway, regarding the 77% debate on Facebook, we asked who is to blame for human trafficking. A lot of comments have come through, and of course, we can't read all of them. But Les Brown asks, is the image of Europe really false, to be sincere? I think there's no doubt that many Africans are trafficked because of bad governments and seat-tight presidents who just know how to steal elections and careless about the interest of their people. Another one from Amar Adam says, if Africa gets fair trade with its European partners and equal opportunity to study abroad without proficiency test barriers, no one will be in a boat on Mediterranean Ocean.
Yeah, and that's the sad story. Frank Emma says the failure of African governments to provide job opportunities is forcing youngsters to make that dangerous journey to Europe. So there's a lot, Eddie, on that topic.
Yeah, definitely. Due to time, we really can't go through all the comments, but thank you very much for sharing all those comments with us. My name is Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.